IPU On Air, the Interparliamentary Union's podcast.
Welcome to IPU On Air, the podcast where we explore the pivotal roles that shape our democracies. I'm your host from the Interparliamentary Union for today, Kate Brooks, and we have a special guest joining us. We're honoured to welcome Mr. Andreas Norlén, the Speaker of the Riksdag, Sweden's national legislature. Mr. Norlén has been a Member of Parliament since 2006 and served as Speaker since 2018. He previously chaired the Committee on the Constitution in Sweden, where he championed transparency, accountability, and broad political consensus. Today's episode is particularly significant as it coincides with IPU's Six World Conference of Speakers of Parliament, bringing together leaders from across the globe to discuss and collaborate on the issues pressing our world. In this episode, Holding the Gavel, Behind the Role of the Speaker, we will explore the multifaceted responsibilities of a speaker, the challenges they face, and the opportunities they seize to enhance legislative processes. Constitutional scholar, seasoned parliamentarian, and internationally respected voice on democratic processes, Mr. Norlén, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with the fundamentals of Parliament. The Speaker plays a central role in ensuring that parliamentary business is conducted orderly and fairly, efficiently and respectfully. What are your core responsibilities as the Speaker in Sweden, and how do you see your role in maintaining order and fairness in the chamber?
Well, I would say if I were to divide my calendar in three pieces, one third would be parliamentary work, of course, leading the sessions in the chamber, planning and organizing that work, working together with the party group leaders, with the chairs of the standing committees and so on. One third would be administrative work, chairing the Riksdag board, which leads the Riksdag administration with its roughly 700 employees, working with anything from maintenance to security to support for committees and chamber and so on. And one third of my time would be representing Parliament to the public, but also to international guests. And I also, of course, travel extensively myself. So these would be my three core tasks in the Swedish Parliament. And focusing on the first one, the traditional role of the Speaker to maintain order and equity in the parliamentary work, that is, of course, the very core task of any speaker. And I'd say Sweden has been a democracy for the past roughly 100 years, and parliamentary work is well organized. So, and I would say all members respect the playbook, the rules. So this is not a very hard task on a daily basis. But of course, I have sometimes intense discussions with the party group leaders about how to develop, for instance, the rules on debates, or where we should set the standards on how to behave in the chamber, for instance, between members. So I think it is a work that never ends. You have to have a continuous discussions on those issues.
That's a really digestible way of explaining it into these three different types of responsibilities. Can you speak a little bit to how you mentioned having to sort of manage competing interests in the chamber and making sure everybody is heard?
Well, I think one basic assumption or one basic principle is that the members should not see themselves as enemies, even if they belong to different political sides. They are colleagues in the service of democracy. And I think this is a perspective that is that the members of the Swedish Parliament share. And I think that is a very important prerequisite, because that makes it possible to have a fruitful and dialogue, and that the members at the end of the day trust one another. That they might represent different parties, different interests, but in the end, they are all servants of democracy. And I think that is crucial to maintain trust and stability in the parliamentary work. But of course, I decide the rules on debates, for instance, and then I discuss with the party group leaders, and we agree on on how to handle different forms of debates, and then it is my role in the chamber or the deputy that is replacing me, the deputy speaker, to uphold these rules and standards. And we do so, I'd say, very cautiously and with a great sense of balance, because the members must never suspect that we favor one member or one party over the other, depending on our own party affiliation.
And political consensus building is an area where you have done a lot of work. Could you speak a bit to your time on the Committee on the Constitution?
Well, the Swedish Committee on the Constitution has two main tasks. One is, of course, to prepare and handle legislations on constitutional matters, the constitutions, but also other nearby issues. The other one, which is special, I think, relatively unique in the democratic world, is that this standing committee has the role to scrutinize the works of the government in the way that any member can file a complaint with our committee or with this committee on an individual minister or the works of the entire government on formal issues, not on policy issues, but has this or that minister broken any rules, precedents, law on when the minister conducts his or her work. And then the committee scrutinizes this, asks questions to the government, can hold hearings. And this can be on very detailed issues. Has the handling of this particular document been correct or not? Or it can be about the huge scandal, which of course we do have sometimes also in Swedish politics. And I think it has been, when I became chair, the committee was relatively polarized, that the parties on the government side never wanted to criticize the government. The parties of the opposition always wanted to criticize the government. And I said, together with my deputy chair, I represent the moderate party, the Swedish Conservative Party. He represented the Social Democratic Party in opposition, or in government at the time. And we sat together and we said, we want to change these dynamics. We want to have a more legally based analysis, a more objective analysis, and we want precedents from our committee that can stand, that can be maintained regardless of who is governing and who is in opposition, because these things change from time to time in a democracy. So we want to set standards that can apply to any government at any time, and we actually succeeded. So we brought together the committee, and during our 4 years, the committee was unanimous in all of its decisions on the works of the government. And that tradition has been maintained since. So also the chairs and deputy chairs and members that have come after us have maintained this tradition and this ambition to be unanimous, and have succeeded in that. So I think it was very important that we set that standard and had that agreement and created a kind of culture of unanimity. Of course, there are fierce battles also in Swedish politics on policy matters, and so it should be in a democracy. But I think it was very important for this committee to come together and say, when we scrutinize the formalities on how a government should be run, then we should leave politics aside and focus on the formalities.
So diplomacy plays quite a role then?
I think diplomacy, people-to-people contact, is very important in parliamentary work, as in any other walk of life. So I think you need to know when to listen and when to speak. And I think if you lead a parliamentary body, be it a committee or something else, you need, of course, to have an idea of where you want to go. But you also have to pay very close attention to the others in the room, and you have to know where they come from and where they might want to go, so that you can bring about the best possible outcome, the best possible compromise, because I think that is what it's all about. And I think that is sometimes what is lacking also in democratic parliaments, the will to listen and not just to talk yourself, because I think you need to both talk and listen and try to find common ground. And I do think that we we lack that ambition sometimes in many countries, the will to find common ground.
Absolutely. And that's linked directly to why we have speakers in Geneva this week at the IPU Conference of Speakers of Parliament. Can you speak a little bit, you mentioned earlier, the international nature of the role. What purpose do conferences like this and networking with other speakers and the Interparliamentary Union in general, what consequence and significance do they have to your role as speaker, particularly the public-facing role and the representative role?
Well, like I said, about a third of my time is spent on representing Parliament to the domestic, to our the voters in Sweden, but also on the international stage. And I think platforms such as IPU and other international bodies are very important because, as we mentioned a little while ago, everything human is about meeting, coming together, discussing and listening, talking and listening. And I think IPU provides a very important platform in that regard, that you can you bring speakers from 100 plus different countries here to Geneva this week to have discussions. Of course, the general debate is important. The seminars are important, but I think also the bilateral contacts that such a gathering brings about is very important. So I have a long list of bilateral meetings that I will hold with primarily other speakers. And I think it is important that we learn from one another, that we, not least in troubled times like the ones we're living in right now, that we need to discuss the situation from various angles, to learn from each other, but of course also to make clear where there are sharp differences in international politics. And I think we will hear that in the general debate as well, that there are very significant differences, a clash of values systems in the world going on today, and which will shape the international order for the decades to come. And that is also important to shed light on too, because of course I talked a lot about finding common ground, and that is important, but it is also important to know and to demonstrate when countries or others are really at odds with each other, because then we need also clarity.
And of course, one of the focus of the conference this week is multilateralism and how multilateralism is under threat in a way it hasn't been before, as you mentioned, in our troubled times. How can you speak to the challenge of that, of interacting with your peers from other countries? And you obviously believe in multilateralism and international cooperation. How do you advance that agenda in the world that we live in today?
Well, firstly, I think it is tremendously important to safeguard multilateralism and the institutions that underpin our current system of multilateralism. We know that there are countries, big countries, who might want to reshape the world order that we built since World War II, that we have built since World War II, and create something different. But I think not least for smaller and medium-sized countries such as Sweden and many other countries, it is very important that we have these institutions, these multilateral organizations, which give everyone a voice, not only the big countries. And of course, we can see in the world today democratic backsliding in many regions, in many countries, in a way that is very worrisome. But I do remain an optimist. I think that in the end, democracy will prevail because of its moral strength, but also because it's better at than any other system at delivering wealth and opportunity and growth, because you have, you in a democracy, you unleash creativity, transparency, and so on. And in more closed countries and societies, you foster corruption and backwardness. And I think in the end, that will be very important. But I think we need to stand up for multilateralism and democracy and fight for it, because it is under threat in the world today.
Democratic backsliding is something that we've been speaking to MPs a lot about lately, and the IPU is working on You mentioned that you're optimistic. What is it that gives you hope for the future in this area?
Well, I'm an optimist, but I'm not naive. I mean, there are very strong forces working against democracy and freedom in the world of today. So I don't think anything will come. You cannot take anything for granted, as we might have done in the past. But I do remain an optimist. As I mentioned, I think the moral strength of democracy is there. But I also think that this perspective of growth and wealth is important. The Nobel Prize in economics last year was presented to economists who have shown that democratic institutions are crucial for the creation of wealth. They have compared countries and regions and can clearly show that countries and regions with strong democratic institutions also are much better at delivering wealth to the benefit of their populations. And I think you just have to look at the world of today and see that this holds true, that some countries have developed very rapidly in just a few decades when they have become democracies, and other countries who were at the same level those decades ago are still struggling because they have not created an environment which fosters growth and innovation.
And your role is certainly not an easy one all the time. What are some of the challenges that you face as Speaker?
I think the most important one is something that we have already touched upon, that is to I think as a Speaker you should strive for broad unanimity when it comes to the rules on how to run the Parliament, on debates and on anything else that concerns Parliament. And I guess one of my predecessors used to put it like this: you are in charge of an organization where several hundred people come to be professionally at odds with each other. That is the role of democratically elected members of Parliament, to fight over policy issues. And my role, I would say, is to make them set those policy differences aside and look at the institution as such and its role and where we want it to be in the future. In the Swedish context, I would say this is really not very difficult because, as I said, we do have the common ground that we are all servants of democracy and we are not enemies but colleagues. I'd say that I have met several speakers over the years who have much greater problems where members from different political parties simply cannot hardly speak to one another, and there are walkouts of parliaments and all sorts of very destructive processes and dynamics going on. And I think we should all return to the core that if we want to serve democracy, we need to create and build strong institutions. We need to create and build strong parliaments.
I love that expression, servants of democracy. Something that we haven't touched on yet is the managing the legislative agenda. Can you speak to how you keep the machinery of Parliament moving smoothly, the more procedural side of the role?
Well, I'd say one thing that is important for the Swedish Parliament is that we control our own agenda. Many parliaments have their agendas controlled by the government, also in democracies. And I'd say this is, of course, that this puts us in a much better and easier position than parliamentarians in other countries, perhaps, because we can decide for ourselves when we want to process a particular bill or any other matter. But we do have also two peculiarities or two special features in our parliamentary system. That is, we have very strong standing committees. And so any bill or from the government or a private member's bill that is brought before Parliament has to be processed in a committee and it has to be voted on in the chamber, which means that we have no such things as kill something in committees, which I know there are in other parliaments, or that you can block some items from being voted on in the chamber and so on. So we have a very a system that is very friendly to initiatives from members but also initiatives from the government, of course. So we, anything that is brought before us, we take very seriously, we handle it in a committee, and then we vote in the chamber to decide whether or not Parliament supports that particular suggestion or proposal. And I think this has meant that we need to organize our work very efficiently, because there are several thousand proposals brought before us every year, and we need to have a very smooth system to handle this. And I work very closely with the parliamentary administration, but also with the chairs of the committees and the deputy speakers to make sure that this functions smoothly, because this is, of course, our core task, to handle matters brought before us, legislative proposals or budgetary proposals brought before us.
And the final question I want to ask you before we go is, in your 7 years as Speaker, over the course of your speakership, are there any reforms or innovations that you're particularly proud of, or in the future, looking forward, are there any reforms or innovations you'd like to implement?
Well, I think, without being too pompous, I'd say the Swedish Parliament is a pretty well-functioning body. We have tried to improve the debating rules to some extent, to make them, the debates, even more dynamic and interesting for people to look at. But I would say one reform that was very important that one of my predecessors undertook a couple of decades ago was that we had fixed voting time. So in the old days, we voted after every debate, and they could go on very late in the evening, which made it very difficult for members to plan their days, and also very difficult for members with children to handle their daily life. They could never know if they could pick up a son or a daughter from school, because there might be a vote, there might be a debate. So I think, out of respect for everyone's time, and also to make it easier to be a parent and a member of parliament, there were significant structural changes to the parliamentary weekly agenda. So we now vote on Wednesday afternoon at a fixed time, Thursday afternoon a fixed time, so members can plan their day. They know that when that vote has taken place, it could take half an hour or something, then they could go to pick someone up from school or kindergarten or whatever, or they could have other meetings. So I think, and I would also say, a reform that took place as early as in the 1930s, when we went from to electronic voting, was also very important to make parliamentary life more efficient. So those are two reforms that I try to promote when I meet colleagues from other countries, with fixed voting times, and that you cannot let debates drag on forever into the night. So we always close the chamber at 11, and we seldom debate until 11. Because I think it is so very important to make it possible for young and middle-aged people with children, with families, to be members of parliament and represent their constituents in a good way. And then you need to organize your work in a way that is family-friendly. And so it's not just about making it possible for more women to get engaged in politics. I think in our day and age, both men and women should be able to be active parents, even if they are members of parliament. And I think we should reform our parliamentary works to make that possible.
And I think that's an excellent note to end on, the human dimension of being a parliamentarian and the work-life balance that MPs are also entitled to. I think we've learned today that being a speaker is not just about wielding power, it's very much about serving democracy. Mr. Nolan, thank you so much for your time. It was such a pleasure speaking to you.
Pleasure was all mine. Thank you.
And thank you very much for tuning in to this episode of IP On Air. If you have any more questions or any information you'd like, you can check out our website at ipu.org or follow us on social media.